Today, the Fed capitulates and markets boom. Market update for the 28th of August 2021. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In today's post, we look at the latest movements in the markets and specifically what happened at Jackson Hole. US equities gained another record high this week as investors took assurance from comments by Jerome Powell that the withdrawal of stimulus would be gradual. Stocks have set record after record this year, thanks in large part to the Federal Reserve's massive efforts to prop up the economy and financial markets. But the market's moves have become more tentative as the beginning of the end of the Fed's assistance comes into sight. And of course, unemployment rates in the US have dropped and inflation has picked up. But the Fed chair used his opening speech at the Jackson Hole Symposium to say that although he was recently of the view that the tapering could begin by the end of the year, a further spread of the pandemic from the Delta variant has tempered that stance. My view is that the substantial further progress test has been met for inflation. There has also been clear progress towards maximum employment, he said, referring to the Fed's twin mandates.
Look for the labor market has brightened considerably in recent months. After faltering last winter, job gains have risen steadily over the course of this year and now average 832,000 over the past 3 months, of which almost 800,000 have been in services. The pace of total hiring is faster than at any time in the recorded data before the pandemic. The levels of job openings and quits are at record highs, and employers report that they cannot fill jobs fast enough to meet returning demand. These favorable conditions for job seekers should help the economy cover the considerable remaining ground to reach maximum employment. The unemployment rate has declined to 5.4%, a post-pandemic low, but is still much too high, and the reported rate understates the amount of labor market slack. Long-term unemployment remains elevated, and the recovery in labor force participation has lagged well behind the rest of the labor market, as it has in past recoveries.
But Powell also hedged the central bank's position on the taper by saying it will be carefully assessing incoming data and the evolving risks. The test for tightening is substantially more stringent, Powell said.
Central banks have always faced the problem of distinguishing transitory inflation spikes from more troublesome developments, and it is sometimes difficult to do so with confidence in real time. At such times, there is no substitute for a careful focus on incoming data and evolving risks. If sustained higher inflation were to become a serious concern, the FOMC would certainly respond and use our tools to assure that inflation runs at levels that are consistent with our goal.
In his prepared remarks, Powell stopped short of providing a clearer picture regarding the timing of the central bank's tapering of asset purchases or hiking interest rates, the key elements of its dovish monetary policy aimed at helping the economy recover from the pandemic recession. Indeed, Powell appeared to strike a more dovish tone than other Federal Open Market Committee officials, including St. Louis Fed President James Bullard and Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester, who had said earlier in the day that they expect the tapering process to begin soon and wind down next year. The market is very happy that the Fed is pumping more liquidity into the economy every month. The Fed is enabling asset prices to climb, and the market is pleased with that. Economic data released on Friday delivered in part precisely what economists expected, a pullback in consumer spending and sentiment due to the COVID-19 Delta variant, and signs that the current wave of price spikes will not morph into long-term inflation, which is in line with Fed assurances. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.69%. The S&P 500 gained 0.88% to 4,509. And the Nasdaq Composite added 1.23% to 15,129. Even after our asset purchases end, our elevated holdings of long-term securities will continue to support accommodative financial conditions, Powell added. Of course, the Fed has been buying at least $80 billion in Treasury securities and $40 billion in agency mortgage-backed securities each month since March 2020 to insulate the US economy from the effects of the coronavirus pandemic measures. It's also kept US interest rates at a record low of between 0 and 0.25%. The central bank's actions are being blamed for aggravating price pressures in the US, where economic growth for the second quarter of 2021 was estimated at 6.6% on Thursday, above the 3.5% decline noted for the whole of 2020. The central bank itself has projected economic growth at 6.5% for all of 2021. The Fed's preferred gauge for inflation, the Core Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, which excludes volatile food and energy prices, rose 3.6% in the year through to July. That's the most since 1991. And the PC index, including energy and food, rose 4.2% year on year. The Fed's own target for inflation is just 2% per annum. The question of when the Fed ought to taper its stimulus and raise interest rates has been hotly debated in recent months as economic recovery conflicted with a resurgence of the coronavirus Delta variant. On Thursday, three regional Fed chiefs, Robert Kaplan of Dallas, James Bullard of St. Louis, and Esther George of Kansas City, pushed for a prompt taper, saying the US economy was unlikely to be greatly impacted by COVID's Delta variant, as it was by the original strain of the virus a year ago. On Friday, Philadelphia Fed President Patrick Harker added to their chorus, saying the Fed should taper asset purchases sooner rather than later. Unlike his three colleagues, Harker is also a voting member of the Fed's policymaking FOMC, or Federal Open Market Committee. That makes his comments more influential. But not all Fed members are in favour of a quick taper. Raphael Bostic, who heads the Atlanta division of the Fed and is also a voting member of the FOMC, said on Friday that the Delta variant could profoundly impact growth and needs to be watched closely before any withdrawal of monetary support. Aside from the Fed's asset purchases, the Biden administration has passed the $1.2 trillion in COVID-19-related spending since the president took office in January. Democratic lawmakers aligned to Biden this week advanced a further spending plan of $3.5 trillion to advance his economic agenda. Investors are breathing a sigh of relief as Powell suggests a kinder, gentler Fed tightening, said Mike Bailey, director of research at FBB Capital Partners. Judging by the equity move, my sense is mainstream investors expected a harder line from Powell about tapering starting in the fall and rate hikes locked in for late 2022 or early 2023. During his speech, Powell also drew a line between asset purchases and interest rates, saying the Fed wouldn't be in a hurry to begin increasing rates after it begins tapering its $120 billion a month bond buying program. I would fully expect that they will formally start slowly cutting asset purchases in October, said Jeffrey Eswick, director of fixed income at Frost Investment Advisors, targeting a September announcement. But as long as they continue to be ultra dovish on future rate hikes, I don't think it will create a huge market reaction, at least initially. The next risk factor will likely come from economic reports, given the market's experience with communicating quantitative easing, Kevin Curran, senior portfolio manager at Washington Crossing Advisors, said. While a policy misstep could happen, while a communication misstep could happen, it's really more in the economic data itself where we would look for risk, he said. The Stocks Europe 600 index gained on track for the seventh straight month of gains, the longest streak in 8 months, and stocks climbed in China, where the central bank signaled targeting steps to cushion the economy. West Texas Intermediate crude had its best week since June 2020, and Bitcoin rose above $48,000. "I see two things happening," said Mike Zygmunt, head of research and trading at Harvest Volatility Management in New York. "I see a reflexive dip buying validation, and I see the market embracing a dovish Fed." Regarding the indices' recent strings of all-time highs, including the S&P 500's 52nd record high close so far this year, Zygmunt said the march north has been very consistent. The drawdowns are super shallow and the recoveries are very fast. 10 of the 11 major sectors of the S&P 500 advanced, with energy shares enjoying the largest percentage gain. Chipmaker Nvidia shares rose 2.6% after sources said it would likely seek antitrust approval from the European Union to take over British chip designer Arm. Workday Inc. jumped 9.1% as brokerages tipped their price targets after the company beat second quarter earnings estimates. And stay-at-home darling Peloton Interactive slid 8.5% following its profit warning and its announcement that it was being probed by US regulators over an accident involving the safety of its treadmills. Beijing continues its crackdown on tech companies, threatening to curb their ability to list on US exchanges. US-listed shares of Alibaba Group and Tencent Music Entertainment fell 3.5% and 1.4% respectively, while the Golden Dragon Index dropped 1.1%. On oil, 1 week it was bust, and the next it's boom. Crude prices finished the penultimate week of August with double-digit gains that overwrote the crash from a week ago, helped by a hurricane watch and Fed Chairman Jerome Powell's latest comments over when to end the central bank's stimulus spending. New York traded West Texas Intermediate crude. The benchmark for U.S. oil settled at $68.74, up 1.32 or 2% on the day. And for the week, WTI rose 10.3%, eclipsing last week's 8.9% drop, which was forced by concerns over a COVID resurgence from the Delta variant. For WTI, it was the sharpest weekly gain since September 2020, while for Brent, it was the largest since May 2020. Crude prices rallied as US oil and gas companies raced to complete evacuations from offshore platforms on the Gulf of Mexico as Tropical Storm Ida barreled towards the region before making landfall as a Category 3 hurricane. The Gulf houses oil fields that provide around 17% of American oil production, and over 45% of total US refining capacity is also located there. The risk of the intensity increasing ahead of making landfall may be supporting prices into the end of the week, said Craig Elram, analyst for New York's Onda. Various companies have been removing workers from offshore facilities in anticipation of the storm. Oil also rallied as Fed Chair Powell said that the US economy was on good footings, but still was vulnerable from risks posed by the coronavirus pandemic. Risk assets from stocks to commodities, including oil, have rallied sharply this year, responding to the high inflationary pressure. On the economic front, consumer spending rose by less than expected in July, at a time when the pace of inflation continues to pick up steam. Consumer spending rose 0.3% in July, less than the 0.4% increase expected, while personal consumption expenditures, the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, rose 0.4% in July, which again was matching economists' expectations. Gold hit a three-week high on Friday, notching its best weekly gain since May, after Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell failed to give a clear timetable for tapering US stimulus spending at the central bank's much-anticipated Jackson Hole Monetary Policy Symposium. The dollar and the US Treasury yield tumbled, while risk assets from stocks to commodities, including oil, rocketed on the move. Gold, while labelled as a safe haven, got a ride higher too, given its sensitivity to inflation, which typically propels the yellow metals prices. Powell hasn't given a clear idea of when the tapering will end, leaving the markets to guesstimate and risk bulls to play it to their favour, said Philip Strabel, precious metals strategist at Blue Line Futures in Chicago. Front month gold on New York's COMEX settled up 24.30 or 1.4% to 1,819 after a three-week high at 1,821. For the week, it rose around 2%, its most since the week of mid-May. Strebel said gold could face some resistance from here on. The 1,820 is the 200-day moving average, he said. The next target will be 1,835 to 1,840. Friday's rally in gold came after Powell said the US economy was still on good footings but was vulnerable from risks posed by the virus. Cryptos are back in favour now, with Bitcoin knocking on the $50,000 US door, and Ethereum was up by more than 5% on Friday. This despite approximately 54% of the network nodes split from the mainnet due to a bug in the old version of Geth. Nodes running the old client are being barred from the main network. This could threaten the possibility of double spending and lost funds for those using the network. Go Ethereum tweeted that a bug affecting the old version of Geth had caused the Ethereum mainnet to fork, and he urged all nodes to immediately update to the current version of 1.10.8, which was announced just days ago. Though most miners are mining on the current version and there is no threat of a hard fork, Ethereum developer Tim Baco suggests that the Flex Pool, BTC.com, and Binance pools have been mining on the old unsecured version. Ethereum isn't the only one. Other chains could also be affected and open to exploitation by the bug, including Binance, Smart Chain, Polygon, and DAI. Developers are urging users of Ethereum to avoid doing any transactions on the Ethereum network for a while until things are resolved, and it may also be wise to avoid any major transactions on related chains as well. And across at Bitcoin, Morgan Stanley investment funds have acquired over 6.5 million shares in Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, the GBTC, in a move that comes as other large financial institutions eye ways to give their clients exposure to the cryptocurrency space. According to SEC filings from the company, Morgan Stanley invested in GBTC across more than a dozen funds. Its largest holder of the Bitcoin Focus Fund is now its growth portfolio, which has 2.3 million shares. Other funds include the Morgan Stanley Insight Fund, an equity growth fund that manages $8 billion in assets and picked up over 900,000 shares in GBTC, worth $27.6 million. And the bank's Discovery portfolio bought around 600,000 shares, and its VIF growth portfolio holds 1,300 shares. Morgan Stanley's shares were reportedly purchased in June when Bitcoin was hovering at around $30,000 and GBTC shares were trading close to $30. The fund's shares, it's worth noting, don't represent one full Bitcoin. Instead, according to Grayscale's website, each share has 0.00093781 of a Bitcoin in it. Per Decrypt, the move makes Morgan Stanley the second largest known holder of GBTC behind Cathie Wood's ARK Investment Management, which also holds shares in the fund. Grayscale Bitcoin Trust offers investors exposure to the flagship cryptocurrency, but doesn't require them to actually hold or manage any private keys. It's traded over the counter and requires at least a $50,000 investment and a six-month holding period, and it has a 2% annual expense fee. Over in Europe, European stock markets traded in a subdued fashion on Friday, with investors wary of taking positions ahead of that highly anticipated speech by Jerome Powell. The DAX in Germany traded 0.3% higher to 15,851, while the UK's FTSE climbed 0.32% to 7,148. French consumer confidence edged lower in August with worries about the highly contagious Delta variant of the coronavirus and slowing economic momentum weighing. And in Italy, consumer confidence fell by less than expected, although business confidence turned down more sharply. in Asia. Japan's Nikkei 225 was down 0.36%, 27,641, while China's Shanghai Composite rose 0.59% to 3,522. Chinese technology shares slid as earnings disappointed and the country tightened private industry regulation. The Nasdaq Golden Dragon China Index, that tracks Chinese shares listed on the US, retreated for the first time in 5 days. The Jury World Container Index increased another 2.1% this week, or $204, and also remains 351% higher than a year ago. The average composite index of the WCI is 6,498 per 40-foot container, which is $4,328 higher than the five-year average of 2,260. That's the 19th consecutive week of increases. Freight rates on eastbound Trans-Pacific lanes surged 4% to 11,362 from Shanghai to Los Angeles, and 5% from Shanghai to New York. Spot rates on Shanghai to Genoa gained $203 to $13,464 for a 40-foot box, a change of 594% year over year. And similarly, rates on Los Angeles to Shanghai grew 3% to 1,398. So another source of inflation there potentially. Back here in Australia, Australian shares ended the last week of earnings season slightly higher, led by the major banks, despite a number of disappointing results weighing in on the market. The S&P ASX 200 index ended the week slightly higher, rising 0.4% to 7,488 over the last five sessions. On Friday, the market dipped 0.04%. The major banks contributed to the market gains this week. CBA rose 2.3% to 101.54. Westpac firmed 0.9% to 25.99. And NAB advanced 0.8% to 27.64, while ANZ added 1 cent to close the week at 28.32. The major miners also supported the gains as the price of iron ore rebounded slightly. BHP Group firmed 0.8% to 44.70 and Rio Tinto advanced 2.3% to 109.70. Qantas shares soared 21.2% to 5.15 after the airline laid out plans to restart the international travel by the end of the year, and it buoyed the rest of the travel sector with Webjet climbing 15.9% to 5.53, Flight Centre firming 22.9% to 1689, and corporate travel management adding 10.9% to 2339. WiseTech Global shares popped up 29.3% to 46.35 after better than expected results and strong guidance sparked a short squeeze in its shares. Blackmore shares climbed 28.4% to $98 after increasing its profit margins despite suffering a 14% slide in revenue for the year ended June 30th. Navisonics advanced 16.2% to 676 after the company said it would meet market expectations for a 20% plus sales growth in this year. But the weaknesses in the market were led by Wesfarmers, as it flagged the next few months would be difficult as lockdowns squeezed sales at Bunnings, Kmart and Officeworks. It fell 5.8% to 62.20. Woolworths was also weaker, falling 2.5% to 40.96 as the supermarket warned 2022 was shaping up as an even more challenging year than 2021 amid the fast-spreading Delta strain. NIB Holdings dipped 16.7% to 665, despite the company recording a bumper profit as fewer customers lodged claims. Reece shares dipped 15.3% to 2105, despite booking a 25% profit increase, and the company said the December half remained very uncertain, and Kogan.com shares tumbled 16.1% to 1093 as bloated inventories weighed heavily on full-year profits, which fell by nearly 90% from a year ago. And Appen slumped 14.9% to 1020 after its profit more than halved during the first 6 months of 2021, as customers such as Facebook, Microsoft and Google, grappling with global data privacy changes, redirected spending away from intrusive user tracking technology. So standing back, what you can see is that the Fed is definitely on retreat now. The markets have won again, so expect to see more market gains ahead. I continue to have the view that the Fed will continue its quantitative easing programs into the future, and its exit plan is frankly in tatters. Be interesting to see how it plays out in the next few weeks. And if you want to discuss that further, join me on my live show on Tuesday when Damian Klassen from Nucleus Wealth will join me and we'll be pulling apart the latest market developments and you can ask a question live. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching and I'll see you again next time.